the realization of spiritual leisure and fortune would be a really good thing to have. To realize what a blessed life you're leading. To realize that entirely. So that you don't have to like work it out every morning. And until you realize it, you do have to work it out every morning. You see? Until it becomes second nature, then you have to practice it. So the morning lull is no joke. You know, every day at some point, you know, preferably, you know, first thing in the morning while you're fresh and before the day's begun and all the, you know, emails come and all of that. To just remember every day the amazing opportunity that you have in this life. It's amazing. I mean, you don't, like I said yesterday, you don't have to make stuff up. You just have to observe it. So the three parts of the spiritual leisure and fortune are, number one, to recognize. Recognize it. Which means that you just review. You review the facts. If you need some help on this, you can go on the World Wide Web and do some comparison shopping and see what kind of life you're leading. There's a site, somebody sent me a link to this site recently, where you enter your income and it gives you your place in the world. We should find that site. Do you have it, Cindy, somewhere still? Huh? GlobalRichList.com or whatever. Global Rich List. And it's quite amazing. You know, most people in this room will think, oh, you know, I don't have that much money. But compared to most people in the world, you've got an amazing amount of money, no matter what your income is, you know, in a country like this. So, you know, just go and check it out. Check out how many people are living on $2.50 a day or less. You know, if you need some help, go on the internet. If you also need some help, you could travel a little bit. You could get out of your country and go to places like, you know, you don't have to go too far. You could go to Mexico. You could probably go to certain parts of Boston. But, you know, if you really need some help, you could go to Mexico City or to, you know, to India or Southeast Asia or, you know, some place where people are living lives completely different than yours. I mean, completely, radically different. I used to spend a lot of time in India. You know, there are a lot of people with, you know, the middle class in India is something like 200 or 300 million people now. There's as many people in India living the kind of life that you're leading as there are in America entirely, in the entire population. But India's also got over 1 billion people. So there are a lot of people who aren't living lives like anything like that. There are people living in the, you know, the median strip between like lanes of highways. There are people living right there with raising families in cardboard boxes on median strips. So imagine, your life isn't anything like, imagine that kind of life. So your life isn't anything like that. You know, sometimes when I feel depressed about the chances of getting awakened in this lifetime, of actually reaching the goal, you know, I just do a little bit, I do a little sort of thought experiment. And I think, you know, the difference between my life and the life that a pavement dweller in India lives. I mean, you know, imagine what they think of a life like ours. You see? Maybe it's no more than that between a life like ours and an enlightened life. An awakened life, you see? Awakened life. Maybe it's about the same distance or less, you see. You know, they're human beings too. They have the same kind of hopes and fears. They're not radically different. They're not Martians or something like that. They just have a completely different kind of life than you do. You see, without any of the kinds of leisures and fortunes, you see. So just review that on a daily basis. Try to get the realization of it. Realize it, number one. Number two, think of what it's for. So, you know, it's very important to realize it, but then it's like, well, why? Why do I have a life like this? You see, what's the purpose of a life like this? What would be the purpose of it? How could I make it useful? You see, we are the nobility. Worldwide, globally, we are the global nobility. And in the old days, they used to have a phrase, noblesse and what? Oblige. There's an obligation that we have. When we got a deal like this, we have an obligation. We have an obligation to do something with it. And to do something with it doesn't mean, number one, it doesn't mean just like entertain ourselves to death, which is mostly what everyone's doing. You know, we're just squandering the miracle, using it all up and thinking, well, you know, maybe the whole point of it is just to, you know, have as many entertainment experiences as possible before you die. There used to be a bumper sticker around. I haven't seen it for a while. The one with the most toys at the end wins. This is the summation of consumer capitalist ideology. That is the pinnacle of consumer capitalist ideology. That the whole point is just to acquire and consume and then, you know, get old and die. And that's a waste of a life. That's meaningless life. That's a meaningless life. So noblesse oblige, you know, do something with this up. And the other thing not to do with it, not to just squander it, the other thing not to do with it is sit around feeling guilty about it and sucking your thumb. There, you know, there's a difference between... Guilt is absolutely useless, actually. There's no Sanskrit word, or Tibetan, I think. I don't know Tibetan. But I know there's no Sanskrit word for guilt. There's words for, like, regret, but not guilt. See, guilt is just another way to think about yourself. Yeah? Just another way to think, oh, you know, I shouldn't have this money, or I shouldn't have this education. Or I, you know, why? What good is it doing other people who don't have this money for you to feel guilty about it? See, it doesn't do them any good. What will do them some good is for you to do something about the opportunity that you have, to take advantage of it, so that you can really help others, you see? So you can really help the people in the world. You know, sometimes people, there are people who are, you know, who have big hearts. There are people who are, sometimes people are just born this way, who are very, very compassionate. And then they, like, look around, they actually do, look around at the world that they're living in, and they see the, you know, the billions of people living in very, very traumatic situations. And then their heart kind of breaks, you know, because they feel like there's nothing they can do about it. There's so many of them. Yeah? What can I do about it? So this is why that's only one wing. Remember, there's two wings to a practice. The other wing is wisdom. And the wisdom will tell you how you can help them. How you can help them is to get yourself fixed as quickly as possible. That's how you help them. You don't help them by sucking your thumb and thinking and feeling how guilty, you know, feeling guilty or something like that. You see, not, pity doesn't help. Compassion helps. Compassion should motivate you, you see. Compassion should be motivating. Not just that pity is not motivating. Compassion is motivating. And the wisdom, we'll talk about it probably beginning tomorrow. With the wisdom, you understand that if you change you, you change the world around you. Yeah. And we'll go into that in a deeper way. But if you really realize that, then the oblige part gets to be very, very serious when it comes to noblesse oblige. Because every moment that we waste in our own lives is another moment that other people have to suffer. Another moment that other beings have to suffer. Every moment that we squander, every moment that we put off, that we procrastinate doing what we know we should do with our lives, is another moment that other beings, many billions of other beings, have to suffer. So that's the second thing, is to think about its importance. To recognize it, to think about its importance. What's the third one, you remember? How rare it is, like the blind turtle at the bottom of the sea. And, you know, chances are you don't believe it. You don't believe that your life is that unusual, that the circumstances of your life are that unusual. And again, you know, you have to work it out. You have to check it out, work it out. Think about all the beings, that, you know, not just human beings, but all the living beings that you potentially could have been, you know? If you have any kind of sense of rebirth, you know, there are literally trillions, gajillions, I don't know, of possible lives that you could have taken, possible experiences that you could have. And you got the top of the line. It doesn't get any better than this. This is it. Yeah? I mean, in the Buddhist text, they sometimes talk about heavens. You know, that there are these, you know, these are pure lands or heavens or pleasure beings who live in these kind of heavens. But that's not the best life that you can get. They say that in the mythology about the pure lands, about the heavens, they say that when a pleasure being dies, they call them gods sometimes, gods and goddesses. that when their karma runs out and they die from that, that all their friends, you know, come around and say, "We wish you could get born a human next time. Hope you could get a human birth next time." Because the human birth is perfect, they say. It's a perfect mixture. It's a perfect mixture of things, you know, of having the leisure and fortune, but having enough go wrong so you don't space out. See, in the heavens, in these heavens, the idea is like, you know, you get in there and nothing ever goes wrong until the end. So everything just, it's a little bit like our lives, actually. Like many, you know, sometimes, you know, the lamas will come and say, you guys are living in a kind of a pure land, a kind of a heaven. Because, you know, we're protected from the real, you know, nastiness of much of samsara. And then, you know, these divine beings, they live there, they're like swinging in hammocks for, you know, for years and years and years with people fanning them and peeling grapes for them and, you know, just living it up. And they have no motivation whatsoever to do anything about their lives, you see. No motivation. Sound familiar? No, I mean, many of us are in this position. Many, many people are in this position. Why should I worry about this? See, I'm okay. Things are going pretty well. I see movies in 3D. What do I have to worry about? What are you talking about? Life is suffering. Why should I change my life? Everything's going fine. Until when? Until it's not, you see. And it's the same in the pleasure realms, in the divine realms. Because at the end, you know, the mythology is very kind of, it's kind of sad. They say, you know, for the first time, when the karma starts wearing out, for the first time, they start to smell bad. Body odor. They get body odor. And all the other pleasure beings don't want to be around them anymore because they smell bad. The garlands of flowers that have been sitting on their chest start to wilt. You know, things go wrong all of a sudden. At the end, at the very end, all of a sudden, everything starts to go wrong. And then here's the worst one. And they get a glimpse of what comes next. Having used up all of this karma like jet fuel, having gone through this karma like jet fuel, in order to, you know, to have the shopping malls and the 5,000 channels on television and, you know, endless riches and amusements. There's no immediate good karma left for the next life. And they see that they go down and they totally freak out. That's the mythology on it. It would be like if at the end of our lives we got a little glimpse and we would see ourselves living on the pavements of Bombay. Or worse. You see? And you know, we're so pampered. It's like, you know, to even like contemplate, to even have like 5 seconds of contemplation of a life like that would freak us out. To actually be thrown into a life like that from this life would be intolerable for us. We would go crazy, go mad, because we're so pampered. See? So it's like that. So that's what they say. It's like the human life is actually the best deal because it's good enough so that you're not in unremitting pain all the time for most of us. But that, you know, samsara is kind, like I said the other night. And it's, you know, there's enough that can go wrong on a kind of a regular basis to keep you aware of the fact that you need to do something about your life to change it. That it's not just going to, you know, work out automatically without any effort on your part, right? So that's the, did I go through them all? The rarity, yeah. So recognize the leisure and fortune. Think about what the purpose of your life is. And then don't think that it's your God-given right to get this kind of life again anytime soon. My teacher sometimes, when he gets like really medieval on us, he says, you know, you can just, you know, think as you go through life that you'll never get a life like this again. It's not technically true because of infinite possibility, right? You know, it's kind of like if there's one slot in the roulette wheel, you know, the ball will eventually float. But it could be countless eons before you get a life like this again, anytime soon. That's what they say in the text, okay? You know, and you can believe it or you can't, or you don't believe it, but that's, I'm just the messenger. Yeah? And besides that, it would be a damn better way to live. To just assume that you're not going to get a chance like this again, so you better get going. You see, it's motivational. You know, because a big tendency, a huge tendency, is to procrastinate, isn't it? Huge. To think, oh, you know, I always have more time. And, you know, I'm an American and all. So of course, it's, you know, natural. It's just the way of nature that I should live on the top of the heap while other people's children work in sweatshops for, you know, so I can buy clothes at the Gap cheaply. See? Like, it's our God-given rights somehow. And, you know, even if you don't believe in karma and rebirth and all like that, just look at history. Things can change very, very quickly, can't they? Very quickly. Like, in less than a generation, you know, the thing could be completely upside down. So, you know, we've got a nice little window here. In Sanskrit, they even call it that. They call it chana. K-S-H-A-N-A. Chana. This is the word that is translated as fortune. In the leisure and fortune. Chana. Chana means, it's a word for a unit of time. It means for a little while. For a little while. The window is open for a little while. And, which also implies what? That it could shut at any time. You see, it could shut at any time. You could shut in all kinds of ways. It could shut, you know, in kind of global reorganization of the economy. It could shut personally at any time. See? If you lose your health, for example, it's pretty much over. You see, if you seriously lose your health, if you are in pain, or if you are, you know, if you are on your way out, if the doctor has given you the bad news, you know, the whole idea of a spiritual practice is a little bit anachronistic. Yeah? So, and if you don't think so, well, you know, try to meditate when you're sick, for example. When you have a really bad cold, even just a bad cold. Try to sit down and actually concentrate on anything, you see. It's pretty much over. Try to do your yoga asanas when you have the flu. It's not a pretty sight, probably, is it? Yeah, I mean, and that can happen just like that. You lose your health just like that. Can you lose your health just like that? So circumstances can change. So the leisure and fortune thing is to motivate you.